Is there a reason to actually be excited about Cooper Kupp against the Baltimore Ravens this week, despite a slow run of late? Seattle Seahawks, can we expect another big game out of their pass attack after an electric Thursday night performance? And can the Bills, coming out of their bye, finally be the offense that we expect them to be? All that and more on the Week 14 Viewer's Guide. Let's get into it. It's Friday, December 8th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball, a day I've been looking forward to for a little bit, because joining me to do just that, to talk a little ball, is Sal Vitri of Yahoo Fantasy. Sal, first time on the show here, buddy. We've been trying to make this happen for a minute. What's going on?
Not too much. Yeah, I'm glad to be here, and I'm looking forward to this week. Maybe a historic week of low total games. A lot of people, you know, weather not too disgruntled, you can say, not looking forward to it. Why don't we go with the glass half full of this could be the week our running backs, our defenses get us some points. How about that?
Look, I love that. That's great perspective. And Sal, that's one thing I've learned working with you so far this year. You're generally pretty rosy, optimistic guy. At least that is the persona that you're giving us here on the internet. But on that note, buddy, you know, for the people who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been doing great work with us here at Yahoo so far this year. You've been crushing it on FFL. You've been dominating like the trade talk videos and the seven keys and everything you've been doing. So for the people who in the Yahoo ecosystem, as they say, they're just getting to know you, buddy. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got here.
Yeah, so I take it back. 2018 is basically when I started doing all this stuff. I was at Penn State in college, just started messing around with a camera, putting up some of the research I was doing on fantasy football at the time. And it started gaining some traction on YouTube videos, snowballed from there for a couple of years. And then earlier this season, I got in touch with some people over at Yahoo. It's something grew up reading all the articles, watching a bunch of videos, and it made a ton of sense to join on, fit the schedules. And here we are right now, 14 weeks into the season. And so far, I'd say it's been going fantastic.
I would say it's been going fantastic too. I really enjoyed everything you brought to the table. So this is awesome. Yeah, I mean, look, if you grew up reading Yahoo and you know you're in college in 2018, you pretty much probably read Andy Behrens, because he's like 70 years old, I think now, 80 yeah. years old. So yeah, I mean, hey, it's nice of you to bring some youth to the table. That is definitely what is needed around here, especially, dude, me now. I'm the old washed guy now at this point. I started at Yahoo in 2018, so I appreciate you coming here and dunking on me at this point.
Yeah, no worries at all. Yeah, I actually think I think my dad was telling me about Andy Behrens when he was growing up too. Rita, he's been great.
A plus. Now we're having a good podcast, and the best part is Andy is never going to hear any of this. That is the best part of this. All right, that's enough. Fun business here. Let's get down to the serious affair we have here, which is previewing week 14. If you've been listening to the podcast all year, you know how we do it here on the weekly viewer's guide, the preview here. We go through the games you need to binge, stream, and skip. And we've got a great set of binge games this week, Sal, starting with Eagles at Cowboys. This is not one of those low total games, man. This is one of a 51.5 point total. This is going to be a really exciting contest, obviously, from an NFL perspective. A lot of narratives are going to be coming out of this game, you know, MVP talk with Dak, or, you know, what's going to happen there. So I don't know. Give me something from this game that you've got your eye on.
Yeah, what I got my eye on is some news on Dallas Goedert, probably returning this week, practicing early in the week. Before Goedert got hurt, and it was in this game the last time that he faced Dallas, he was seeing over 20% of the targets that month prior to injury, 7 targets a week that broke down to. And it was kind of him and A.J. Brown running the show. Devonta Smith was in a lull at that point. That's completely changed since then. So I'm curious to see what happens with Dallas Goedert now back. Is that going to affect Devonta Smith, who does struggle compared to, you can say, an A.J. Brown to earn targets versus man coverage, which he's going to see a lot of this week. Now with Dallas Goedert in the middle of the field, how is that all going to work out? I want to start all these guys, but is it going to affect Smith is what I want to see.
I think that is like one of the biggest questions from a fantasy perspective in this game, because the splits over the last 2 years, and look, sometimes I don't know about you, I feel this way sometimes, like to splits just happen, right? To an Adam Harstead thing he's told me over the years, like splits just happen. It can be random, but you can't deny the fact that over the last 2 years, when Goedert has been in there, Smith's numbers have gone down, and when he's out, Smith's numbers go up. And I think Devontae's a fantastic player. Like, I don't really think it has anything to do with him as an individual player in isolation, but it's just like when you can, it's similar to the 49ers, right? Like, when you remove one of these high quality pieces, obviously everybody else gets a boost. But I did find AJ Brown's comments pretty interesting recently, where he said, just during this season, at least since that Dallas game, he's been seeing a lot more coverage rolled his way. He's been seeing a lot more double teams since Dallas Goedert went out. And again, when you just remove one of the three quality pieces, that makes a lot of sense, right? He had the one catch for 8 yards against Kansas City. He had 5 for 37 and a touch against Buffalo in an overtime game, which, you know, that's fine. It's whatever. And then obviously he kind of had a big game against the 49ers in a losing effort last week. So I don't know. I don't know about you, man, but I'm thinking this can definitely be one of AJ Brown's big, like, eruption spots, especially with what we saw on Thursday night, where the Cowboys gave him some pretty big performances to one big Seattle Ole Miss receiver in particular.
Yeah, exactly. And what that Seattle Ole Miss receiver and DK Metcalf saw was just a ton of single high coverage, single high safeties, which is what Dallas loves to run this year. They're second most in the league right now in that formation. They almost use it as like their base front. And what you're getting from that is one-on-one coverage more often for somebody like AJ Brown. So if the comments are true that he's seeing more double coverage, naturally that will be less the way that Dallas plays, and even less with another weapon out there in Dallas Goedert. So yeah, if I'm looking at this in general, the number one guy I want, and it's not going to shock anybody, is AJ Brown from this game, no matter what type of format you're playing in. But luckily, season-long leagues, all these guys in this type of game, you just need to get them all in your lineups.
Yeah, and I think this could be similar to how I felt with last week's game, that we're just getting so many talented receivers, Eagles side, 49ers side. I mean, look, CeeDee Lamb at this point, I think, has graduated to the elite tier in the NFL, right? Coming into this year, I would have said there is an elite tier of 7 receivers. I think, like, maybe Cooper Kupp is graduating his way out of that, and I think that CeeDee Lamb is graduating his way into that, and he's been a player I've been a huge fan of for a long time, so, I mean, it's been great to see. But the best part about what we're getting out of CeeDee Lamb, not just from a fantasy perspective, Sal, but, like, from an NFL perspective, too, is we're getting these other guys in this passing game activated, whether it's Jake Ferguson, who's turned out to be one of the answers at tight end. But I want to ask you particularly about Brandon Cooks, who's had a great stretch here since week 10. He had one catch for 7 yards in this matchup last time we saw him. But since then, it's been 9 for 73, 173 and a touch, you know, 3 for 42. That's going to happen. But 4 for 72 and a touch, 4 for 45 and a touch, like, he's been going off, and he's in a great matchup against this Eagles secondary. So from like a weekly rankings perspective, where do you slot Brandon Cooks?
Yeah, so right now, Brandon Cooks for me, he's in that, when you factor in the game environment range right now, looking at it, he's in that wide receiver 3 low end range, right around like wide receiver 40. But yeah, what you said is true. He's elevating right now like CeeDee Lamb because of the play of Dak Prescott, MVP caliber play, a bunch of touchdowns, almost a half dozen in the last 7 games for Brandon Cooks. And yeah, last time he faced Philly, it wasn't great. Darius Slay had his number for about half of those snaps. But also at that point, Cooks was dealing with an injury, still coming back from one. Mm-hmm. It's been a month since then. He looks healthier. He's playing healthier. He just had his most routes run in a game of the season he's coming off of. So he's trending up. The Eagles secondary and defense, whether it's releasing guys dealing with injuries, just in general plateauing and trending down, I think that he's definitely somebody that's on flex radars in 3 wide receiver leagues. I think he's in most of those lineups. So yeah, Brandon Cooks is somebody that's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, love to see it, man. These other guys like Gallup and Tolbert, they're kind of rotating in and out. But really, yeah, just Brandon Cooks has gotten going here. And again, I think it's because this coach is got, hey, Mike McCarthy, by the way, has got like, he had to have an appendectomy this week, right? He's had a,
yeah, something
like that. Like, I mean, hey, Mike says he's going to be back, which is great, because I think everybody, I said this like with like 1 foot in at the beginning of the season, like, Maybe everybody owes Mike McCarthy an apology. And then like they got blown out by the Cardinals, so I look like an idiot. But at this point, it's like common knowledge. Mike McCarthy, I think everybody owes him a little bit of an apology here based on how this offense has gone. I'm curious, Sal, just like give me a winner. Who wins this game?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Dallas Cowboys in this one right now, just in terms of, you got a close spread here, but I'll take Dallas. I think right now their defense is playing better. I think when you look at their quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts is dealing with what, maybe 3 or 4 different injuries at this point, small things. He's not going to talk too much on them. He's going to play through them, but it's starting to pile up. We saw him miss a drive last week. I'll lean Dallas here. And I'll also say, hand up, I apologize as a Packers fan to Mike McCarthy in the family group messages. I definitely owe you an apology in the past.
I did not know you were a Packers fan. This is
well, whatever's left of the fandom every year. covering the league, it's more and more I just enjoy watching players. But right now, hey, I thought there was going to be a down year, but it looks like they still got me.
Yeah, listen, I wouldn't give up just yet, man. When I was in your shoes and I just like started kind of covering the league and stuff like that, the longer and longer I went into it, I was a Panthers fan. And so there's nothing burning in me for the Panthers. So like you still got good things going on with the Packers, man. Like I would stick that out a little bit.
No, absolutely. The last month I've gone back up the roller coaster. I was completely leaving the amusement park, but I'm back in.
Yeah. You don't have to suffer through your like, oh man, is it Teddy Bridgewater? Is it Sam Darnold? Is it Baker Mayfield? You got a real good thing going there with Jordan Love. I am curious, at least in this game, I'm picking the Cowboys as well. I just want to see if the Eagles can we get anything going from the ground game on a consistent basis? I think that's been rather quietly one of the biggest issues from last year to this year. You know, it's Jalen Hurts not playing to the height of his powers like we saw last year. You mentioned the injuries. That's a big part of it, but like at different times to start this year, DeAndre Swift was looking like one of the answers in fantasy football. And I think he was giving the Eagles like an upgraded version of what they got out of Miles Sanders last year from a ground game perspective. But that has sort of withered away. So I'm at least interested to see if we can get anything from the Eagles running back group in this game. But let's move on to our next game here in the binge category. Rams, Ravens. Ravens coming off their bye as 7.5-point home favorites. It's a 40.5-point total, which isn't, you know, much, but the Ravens can get you like down into the muck a little bit from an offensive perspective. So let's start with the Ravens since we haven't seen them in a week. Sal, what do you got on the Ravens going into this one?
Yeah, I'm most excited. Maybe the entire week, I'm most excited to see what happens with the usage of Keaton Mitchell here. Every single week before the bye, the usage was increasing. Basically took over the backfield in many ways before the bye week, about 50% of the snaps. Had only 11 touches, but so dynamic this year. Was averaging 9 yards a touch. If he has enough touches this year to qualify, he'd actually be ahead of Devon Achane right now for efficiency amongst running backs per touch. So he's been fantastic. What does that look like now? He's a rookie coming out of the bye against stereotypically. You usually see those guys get more usage, and he's trending in that way. So a 7-point touchdown favorite against a beatable Rams defense that their linebackers can very much be gashed in the second unit once you get to that level. I think this could be a big week for him. The first week we see him actually see a 60% snap share.
I would love to see that. He's got so much juice. And you brought up Achane. Yeah. Like, it was pretty similar, like the first few moments that you got to see Keaton Mitchell in late October, early November. It was like, man, this is not like, maybe it's like a Bud Light Diet Coke version of Devon Achane there in Miami, because he can just hit the edge and just like shot out of a cannon. And like, I like Gus Edwards. I think Justice Hill brings them a veteran presence that the coaching staff seems to really gravitated to. Like Todd Monken's group there seems to pretty excited about Justice Hill. But I don't think that there's a scenario, Sal, where Keaton Mitchell ices out these guys from the backfield at this point. But I think that can still be true, and he can still cement himself as kind of a clear-cut fantasy running back two down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. If we can get to a point where we're getting a dozen touches, 10 to a dozen touches pretty concretely, yeah, he's going to work his way into a good amount of flex situations.
He's not the only post-bye rookie bump candidate there for Baltimore. We've also got Zay Flowers, who has been getting some solid usage throughout the season. He had a really high target total and a really, he obviously had an electric touchdown late in the game, two touchdowns, but the rushing touchdown late in the game against the Chargers prior to the bye. I love me some Zay Flowers. I think he is really underrated as a separator against press man coverage. Like his reception perception rookie report, the charting data from the work I did over there, it looks really good. Like he looks like a guy, Sal, who could win in that intermediate area, even though we haven't seen him use there a lot so far. How high do you think Zay Flowers can fly if we get him, you know, more activated in that intermediate area?
Oh, real high. I have him as a top 24 receiver this week, and that's just assuming we see pretty similar usage to what we're already seeing. But yeah, you mentioned it. Intermediate area. In week 10, we kind of got a glimpse of this. His average target distance was like double what it usually is, like 15 yards downfield. Since then, it's been like 6-7 yards. It almost reminds me of like Jalen Waddle's rookie year, just a lot of short targets, picking up some volume, different types of players. But that's what at least I think of. And yeah, I think Flowers right now, top 24 guy. And if he starts to see that, it's only going to move up, especially with Mark Andrews out. You start to project a larger target share. He's seen 24% of the targets since Andrews has been out.
I actually love that Jalen Waddle comparison, because I remember the narrative about Jaylen Waddle coming out of his rookie year. It's like, 9.8 yards per reception, right? He's only getting these like short, dinky passes. And they had a coaching change, obviously, from that RPO heavy offense. And then I think they had like three offensive coordinators that year in Miami. It was kind of a train wreck. And then obviously Mike McDaniel comes in there in Jaylen Waddle's second year and he leads the league in yards per reception. That's kind of how I feel about Zay Flowers. I mean, he's still developing, and I don't think there's going to be an offensive coaching change, nor should there be, obviously, in Baltimore this offseason. But there's more meat on the bone for Zay Flowers than what we've seen so far. And I think that Jaylen Waddle comparison is actually a really instructive one.
Yeah, I think that when we're talking next season for just redraft, we're going to start to see him as like a seventh or eighth round pick and quickly become fourth, at latest fifth round pick, for the same exact reasons. Just people are going to try and start to connect some of the dots of what his usage can look like based on his skill set.
I love that. Anything else in terms of the Ravens pass game, like any of these ancillary guys, Isaiah Likely, Rashad Bateman, Odell Beckham? I would love to see Bateman grab a bigger role. It just hasn't really happened so far this season.
Yeah, it hasn't happened so far. Odell, we'll see where he's at with his shoulder injury. He's been playing through it. Could be a month, could be 6 weeks type of an injury. He's getting to that month range where he could be healthy. The quote-unquote revenge matchup, although they paid him and got him a Super Bowl ring. I don't know how much
revenge does Odell need against the Rams?
It's going to be a rosy return. So I would say not much here. Isaiah Likely just kind of falls into that range of like tight end 12 to 15 of guys who you hope fall into the end zone.
It is worth noting, as we're talking here on Thursday afternoon, Lamar Jackson was not present on the practice field for the Ravens. There is a small illness kind of going through Baltimore. Like, yo, why is it? What is, somebody needs to do a full scale investigation into Lamar Jackson's immune system? OK, because it seems like every year around December, November, something like that, a guy starts getting sick. You know, sometimes it's the stomach thing. You know, he famously left the one game and then came back. Did he go to the bathroom? Did he not? I don't know. We never got a full scale investigation on that one. But like, I'm not raising the alarm bell here with Lamar. But again, just something to note that he was not out at practice here on Thursday.
I mean, there's a theory that I'm thinking right now is the Thanksgiving leftovers in the fridge too long? And he's been eating those and they've been sitting there for a couple of weeks too long.
Sal, you are piquing my interest on this because listen, I know it can be a grind at this point in the NFL season for all of us. Okay. For the players, especially, I know they've got a lot going on. Their schedule's tough, but you can't be eating the leftovers this many weeks away from Thanksgiving. Okay. It is beyond time to let that go. Okay. We need some fresh food for Lamar Jackson. This guy can finish the year strong and have a potential second run at an MVP. Okay. We can't be letting foodborne illnesses get in the way of this thing.
I agree. Completely agree.
All right. Well, again, we will reach out to our sources within the NFL. Obviously, Sal and I both laden with sources in the NFL front office to launch a full-scale investigation into that one. In the meantime, though, Rams. The Rams are getting pretty like kind of cut and dry here, Sal, where it's Kyren Williams, it's Puka Nacua, and like this, that's the driving force of the offense at this point.
Yeah, I agree. And when I look at it, I start with those two receivers. They're back to back in my rankings, 15 and 16. Puka's just slightly ahead. Now, the one thing when I try and think about this and really finalize those rankings is this matchup against the Ravens, they do a lot of things with coverage. They run basically everything. They'll disguise things. They'll use every type of scheme and man versus zone, whatever it might be, at similar rates. So it's kind of hard to understand what's happening out there. And when I think about that, Cooper Kupp, he's seen it all. He's sophisticated. He knows how to get open against these routes. And not to say that Puka Nacua can't do that, but he's also a rookie. When it's the bullets are flying heat of the moment, he might miss some things in there. So is this a spot where Matt Stafford just trusts Cooper Kupp more, who, even though definitely dealing with some injuries, it appears not really himself out there, still led the team in target share last week. Stafford's still going to him. So that's where I'm just starting to think, okay, media is kind of down on Cooper Kupp right now. Is this sort of a week? Definitely in your lineups. Any flex questions, I still want to play him, but you're talking DFS, you're talking player props situations. That's where I think Cooper Kupp could be an interesting play as well.
No, that's a good note, because honestly, I'm definitely pretty nervous about what I've seen from Cooper Kupp and like the way he's moving out there. And, you know, I think they're giving him a lot of just like layup routes, and he's been the layup route king since he came into the NFL, but they're really cutting back on his intermediate routes. And a lot of that is going to Puka. Like, I think he has, I'd say he solidified himself as the most dangerous receiver on the team right now, Puka, but I mean, the thing with Cooper Kupp, and this is what I want to stress, and I think this is a good point that you're making here, Sal, like, for a player like this with a resume like he has, he can get back to it in an instant. You know, at the same time, is it the beginning like of a decline for Cooper Kupp? I think that's possible, but I like that you're leaving the door open here for something, because I'm definitely nervous about this matchup with the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. The concerns are everywhere, I would say. Like, you even start to look at Kyren Williams as a 7.5-point underdog, but then you remember the guy's not coming off the field. He's in there for every red zone situation. They're only projected for, what, like 16 points, so who knows how many times they score, but he'll be there. He'll have opportunities, potential touches. It's tough to not make him a top 10 running back this week and every week, and if that's the case, if in a tough matchup like this he's still top 10, I mean, in good matchups moving forward, he's going to be a top 3 to 5 back.
No, that's a good point. I put him in my top 4 in terms of rest of season rankings at running back when we did the show with Eckler this week. I think he has solidified that role here going forward. Let's talk NFC West divisional matchup here for our next game. Seahawks, 49ers. 49ers are 10.5-point favorites, 46.5-point over-under. I mean, the 49ers are pretty cut and dry. Like, the offense is great. You start everybody. I don't know if you have a lean, like a matchup note on one way or another with these guys, but everybody's pretty dialed in from a 49ers perspective right now.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it on Thanksgiving, and it's hard not to just say, like, hey, you should probably do the same thing, just like attack the middle of the field and the Seattle linebackers and exploit the coverage that they use a lot of cover three. So basically, tight ends, if you have a good one, that'll work. Okay, George Kittle, if you have a good running back, yeah, that'll work. And I know you have Deebo Samuel, who basically does it all. All that's great. Then there's top 10 wide receiver Brandon Ayuk in my rankings this week. It's hard to just not say start all these guys. I do like George Kittle from a standpoint of any type of player props, DFS coming in lower owned this week in those streets. But yeah, I think all these guys are just a go. What you saw on Thanksgiving, 2 weeks ago, is, I think, going to repeat here.
Kittle's a good call with that cover three look there, that they can get a lot going in the middle of the field there from a George Kittle perspective. So, I mean, look, you don't have a better tight end than George Kittle on your fantasy team, but I like that on a potential like overcall for his prop bets. Seahawks, man, do you buy what you saw on Thursday night last week against the Cowboys? Because, Sal, I was so high on this passing game coming into the season. I thought they were so well set up with these three receivers with the way Geno played last year. And it's been frustrating. Like, low-key, they've been a little Steelers-esque this season. But last week, Geno got the ball out fast. We talked about that on the Stat Nerd Show with Dalton a couple days ago. So do you buy what you saw out of the Seahawks pass game last week?
Yeah, I mean, I buy it. It's what we saw last year. It's just a matter of consistency now. We've seen, I would say, like, the first 6 to 8 weeks of this season, it's been Geno going to the press conferences and Pete Carroll and basically saying, like, the game was perfect except these two plays. Like, it was just, and they're always catastrophic interceptions or a terrible sack taken by Geno. And lately, he's slowly starting to put that back together to what we saw last year. You mentioned they got the ball out quick. Is that just like a matchup thing because you don't want to go up against that Dallas defensive line? Probably. But we're seeing Jackson Smith, the Jigba, come alive a little bit. So it's a matter of consistency now. They've gotten three when you consider playing the 49ers a couple weeks ago. Brutal matchups and a brutal stretch to get through here. So I'll buy it for what we saw. I'm just a little bit skeptical that it continues in what might be a tougher secondary when it comes to more man-to-man looks this week. And we saw that on Thanksgiving for basically shutting down their entire passing attack.
Yeah, I know the box score looks like, whatever with JSN. I mean, it's a season-high 11 targets, but only 7 for 62. But got to remember that he had the one play in the end zone very close to making that catch, ended up getting called an incompletion. A lot of PI stuff like that. I think we could be maybe seeing the start of his rise. And I wonder if they think about that a little bit with, okay, we only got him for two catches on that Thanksgiving game. Maybe he can become a bigger factor for the Seahawks down the stretch. Anything else from this game before we move to the next one?
The only thing I'll point out is that Thanksgiving game was really weird. They only had one first down, Seattle, in the first half. The second half, they had a pick six. Their offense wasn't on the field a lot. So you see like DK with like a 30-yard game. It is a tough matchup against Ward, but I think you can almost throw that one out because their offense just did not have a lot of time to possess the ball. Coming off of this hot game, maybe that rolls a little bit more. You feel confident about them in your lineup.
All right, next game and our final game in the binge category, Buffalo Bills at Kansas City Chiefs. We've seen these two teams match up a lot in recent years. It's a 48.5-point over-under. But like I said, we've seen these teams match up a lot, Sal, but these two teams are pretty different than the group, than the units we've seen the last couple of years, particularly Kansas City's offense. I think we're at a point now where we know what this Chiefs offense is, and it's not the same electric units of the past. But how do you feel about them going into this matchup? And a lot, you know, a lot of injury notes potentially too, going into this matchup against the Bills.
Yeah, the first thing that stands out is the injury notes with their running back, who now appears to be a three down back with Jerick McKinnon being out. Isaiah Pacheco, hasn't practiced this week. Now, this isn't uncommon. They could just log a practice tomorrow and be good to go, just resting anything, a shoulder injury there. So not lower body, that helps him a little bit. Every week it's like a career high usage week. It's career high production for Isaiah Pacheco. Last week he did it, three down back against the Packers, 110 yards, almost with ease in like three quarters of play. And now he's starting to get passing game usage with McKinnon out. So I think that's definitely the first spot to look. If you have Pacheco, if you're in a deeper league, just add Clyde Edwards-Helaire for now. Just see what happens. It doesn't feel great, but if he's offense, seen a dozen times. Yeah. If he's in that, and he's somebody who's maybe either going to break some tackles for you based on the size that it seems like he put on, or it's not going to go well at all. But if he's going to be getting a dozen touches out there, you have to pick that up off the waiver wire. So yeah, Pacheco's the first thing that stands out to me.
Yeah, and obviously Travis Kelce's in the role that he's in. And Rashee Rice, like, I don't think they're going to make him a full-time player this year because I think they don't trust him to run, like, big boy routes outside, down the field, stuff like that. I wish we would see more of that from him, but my guess is that they just don't trust him doing that stuff. And again, we don't have a lot of evidence based on the way he's played this year that he can do that. Again, I want to see more of it. I think that's, like, the final step in his, like, breakout. I mean, like, he's had a fantasy breakout, but I'm talking like a real life big boy NFL receiver breakout. That's the next step of it. But still, even with that being said, I think he is still a fantasy starter in this game.
Yeah, it's good to see, because 2 weeks ago we saw him have that first game of 100 yards, had a nice target share. I wasn't too sure with Tony coming back if things would switch up, and it really didn't. Like, he still saw a good amount of targets. And what stood out watching that game was Mahomes trusted him in the second half on big third downs, throwing his way. Kelce was being double teamed in the middle of the field often. That'll slowly stop, which only helps Travis Kelce in this offense if Rashee Rice can keep winning these third down and five matchups for the Chiefs.
Let's talk Bills coming off their bye week. And I don't know, man, Sal, maybe I'm a dumbass, but I kind of feel pretty good about the Bills coming off their bye. I know what the record is. I get that part of it, but this Chiefs defense, and I think the temptation is, Chiefs defense, you know, they're going to come and, you know, whoop the Bills around a little bit, and maybe that's what happens. But since week 11, I mean, the Chiefs are all the way down in terms of EPA per play. They're 26 in the NFL, and there's been some tougher matchups, like with the Eagles, obviously that's a tough one, but we're talking about the Raiders mixed in there. Like, Jordan Love, I know, you know, you're a Packers fan. He's the new Aaron Rodgers, but at the same time, it's a young offense. Like, this is not a murderer's row they've had since coming off their bye. The Kansas City Chiefs defense, I feel like the Bills can really, I don't know, go on a run here. Again, maybe I'm a dumbass because I've been saying that all season, but I think this is a good, a rather good spot for the Bills to get going here.
No, I agree with that. The schedule is brutal. Like, in terms of getting in the playoffs in the AFC, we'll see, but it's desperation mode for them. They know that they need every single one of these games now. They let a few slip away earlier in the year, start the year against the Jets without Aaron Rodgers. And I think we're going to see old Josh Allen. We've kind of seen it a little bit lately. Like, he's just running around, chicken with his head cut off sometimes, making plays, might open himself up to some hits, but they're at the point where he's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's open this thing up. New offensive coordinator in there. And we're starting to see them play faster. We're starting to see them score more points. That's a big one, right? And the thing that stands out now is Dawson Knox coming back. It seems like it shouldn't be a big thing for real life or fantasy, but when you look at what happened before, they're using more two tight end sets, less three wide receivers. I'm not convinced they're going to go back to that. They liked some Dawson Knox, but Ken Dorsey's gone. Do we really trust the fact that this is going to just change the way that they've played this entire time, looking better on offense and more comfortable? And Josh Allen just looks more comfortable. I'm not too sure that it's going to be Dawson Knox coming back into his same role.
I am not convinced either. I know that was like the plan going into the year, the two tight end stuff. They kept calling it 11 and a half personnel. Well, it didn't really work. Teams just came out there and they matched them in nickel, which is what you do when it's like, when you talk about, oh, this tight end's basically a receiver. Well, they just play him like a wide receiver then. And then it's not as advantageous for a guy like Dalton Kincaid. Like, he's just really good as a tight end. You know, let's just keep him being a tight end, not a slot receiver. I like Khalil Shakir, big fan of him as a prospect coming into the league, as a solid day three sleeper. I think he's played well when he's out there. Like, let's keep this 11 personnel, like true three receiver set offense out there, because I think it's better for Allen. I think it does spread the ball out a little bit, like maybe decrease it, maybe takes Diggs from being a top three fantasy receiver to a top five fantasy receiver. Like, so really you can't be complaining too much there. I think it just makes the whole offense better overall for the Bills to operate that way. All right, let's move now into our stream category, pick up the pace here a little bit. We really beefed out on those games, and there's four really good games there. So Lions at Bears, the first one that I have here in the stream category. This game is a potentially really fun fantasy contest here, Sal.
Yeah, and the thing that stands out to me is since Justin Fields has come back, DJ Moore has a 44% target share, 11 targets per game. Now we'll see what happens this week. Detroit plays a lot of cover three and cover four. Justin Fields has not done as well this year against those looks. It's translated to DJ Moore's play, but the way he's getting targets right now, you can't keep him out of your lineup.
No, it's a great matchup against the Lions secondary that's been ultra generous of late. I think we know what kind of the deal is with the Lions offense. So last note, just kind of from this game, Bears backfield. Roshon Johnson goes out there the week before the bye and plays a ton. Gets probably the best like usage for his entire season, at least from a playing time standpoint. But my question to you, Sal, is one, how sticky is that for Roshon Johnson from like a rest of season perspective? Donta Foreman is potentially coming back for this game. Also, I've heard, you know, some people posit the theory that, well, Roshan's a great pass protector and they were obviously trying to get the ball out quick and everything. Just what do we think in terms of how this backfield looks here in week 14?
Yeah, Foreman coming back, I think, is more important than it seems. He's had big games for them. He works his way into short yard situations. And I just can't find confidence in like starting a Roshon Johnson. Yeah, I want to pick him up, see what happens. But it came out of nowhere in his week 12 usage, based literally out of nowhere after Khalil Herbert seemed to have taken that backfield back a week prior to that. So I almost lean that it is the matchup type of thing, the way that the game script ended up playing out and how he was playing. I think he had like three catches on the first drive, had a nice game going, and you just roll it from there. So I want to see one more week of this, especially with Foreman back. I'm not confident in it.
Yeah, same. I feel the exact same way about it. All right. Like I said, I think that game's going to be really fun from a fantasy perspective, but it's not like a ton to break down because the Bears are such an easy offense and like the Lions, we know what to do. Like, play the Lions running backs. Amon-Ra St. Brown's going to crush it. Sam Laporta's going to crush it. This is a pretty simple cut and dry game from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah. It's rinse and repeat for the backfield. Montgomery keeps seeing season high type of red zone work while Gibbs gets the passing game work at season high usage, like 5.5 targets a game.
Well, look, we love when the teams make it easy for us. The New York Jets have not made anything easy on themselves all year long, haven't made it easy to watch them all year long. They will be welcoming Zach Wilson back into the starting lineup this week as the Texans come to town for our next game up here. So the Jets, I mean, bro, the Breece Hall says he's likely to play this week. I'm likely to not play him on any fantasy team that I have Breece Hall. It's a disaster for the Jets. I don't know if you have any rosier pictures to paint here with Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, anything here.
I think the best thing we could take from this is just we have a larger sample of what to expect from Zach Wilson, like as opposed to these last couple of weeks of saying like, what can possibly happen with Tim Boyle out here? What can possibly happen with Trevor Siemian coming in? We at least know that he's probably just going to throw the ball 40% of the time to Garrett Wilson, and we hope that half of those targets are accurate. And then if the game stays close, and this is where I actually think you might get some upside for Breece Hall, is just in the receiving department. He has 6 targets a game since week 6, and this defense that he's facing in the Texans allow top 5 passing game usage the last couple of months to the running back position. So I think you might get one of those 5 catch games from Breece. PPR formats might help you out. But other than that, like, yeah, the Xavier Gibson weeks out of randomness last week and all the other pieces here are not much. Tyler Conklin, I saw getting some targets, not much moving forward for me.
Yeah, I'm all set on that. Okay, Houston Texans, that side of it here. No Tank Dell, which sucks. Tank Dell was having a really fun season. Him and Stroud have a great chemistry. My guy Nico Collins is I think set it and forget it. Wide receiver 1 rest of the way, but what about the rest of this Texans pass game without Tank Dell?
Yeah, this one, It has me a little stumbled, I would say. Like earlier in the year, we got the back-to-back 150-yard games from Noah Brown, filling in for Nico Collins at that time, though. He's running those deeper intermediate routes when Nico Collins is out. Tank Dell is running some underneath, opening some things up. Is that going to be the same exact type of usage? I don't think so, now that it's the opposite and Tank Dell's out and Nico's still in the game. So it'll be kind of weird to see where Noah Brown fits in. Is he just going to naturally do what he did more so in Dallas, underneath stuff? Block and release stuff at times. So that'll be interesting to see. He's not really somebody that I want to get into my lineup this week. It almost makes me wonder, is there an opportunity for one of these other rookies, John Metchie, Xavier Hutchinson, that they drafted, to slowly work their way in? But it seems like they don't trust him based on previous week's usage.
Yeah, Metchie is tough because he's been kind of like a rotational fourth receiver for them, fourth or fifth receiver at times. I wonder if we see more of him, but he profiles more to me as like a slot receiver. And I think that that's really where Noah Brown's primarily going to operate. Like, my guess is that I think we see Nico's going to remain the X receiver. And then we have like Robert Woods and Noah Brown kind of alternating, and more so Brown in the slot, but alternating between the flanker slot role. So like, I think Mechie's kind of still squeezed out there, and Hutchinson, I don't know. He's a bit of a weird player to me. I don't quite know like what role he fits in best yet. So you're right. It's those names are worth monitoring, but I think if I have to pick a Texans receiver, and I'm not like rushing to get these guys in lineups either, but like the rest of the way, I think Noah Brown probably has the best path to upside.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And I think it's important to try and hash it out just because of how good this offense, they're only passing more and more by the week.
Right. I mean, by the way, what an amazing thing to say. Like, we got to figure out these Texans depth receivers, man, because this offense is too good. But that's where we are at this point.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's the complete opposite of what the backfield is right now, where we thought we had a guy for a couple of weeks. And now it's gone with Devin Singletary this past week, just less than 50% of the snaps. And I think at this point, it's if you have one of these guys and you're forced to play him, that's sad, but otherwise don't.
Yeah, just try not to. Hopefully you have a better option than that. I mean, if you're listening to a fantasy football show right now, I mean, number one, you like us, which, you know, shout out to you, appreciate you. But if you're listening to the show here on December 7th, you're probably like, you got a pretty good team. You didn't tune out in September. Or maybe you don't have a very good team. And again, thank you for that. You should stick around. Always listen to the show all year long, not just because you have a good playoff contending team. But if you do have a good playoff contending team, hopefully you don't need a Texans back to make it there next week. Let's move on to the next game here in the stream category. And this one is like the theme of the season, buddy, the backup quarterback bowl here, Indianapolis Colts at Cincinnati Bengals. Let's start with the Bengals here, man. Jake Browning played sneaky well, I would say, in that Steelers game. They just barely ran any plays, but then he came out and like under center play action, shooting the ball down the field. I mean, he was awesome against the Jags on Monday night. I know I did not see that coming.
Yeah, they were saving it for prime time because I watched that Steelers game and everything was a 5-yard pass, nothing down the field. And then he starts coming out and he's hitting things with anticipation in the middle of the field, hitting anticipation throws to the outside parts of the field. I mean, it helps when you have somebody like Ja'Marr Chase, that's always going to help. And credit to some extent to the coaching staff getting him ready for this moment. But the guy balled out. I mean, he played potentially the game of his life. We'll see what happens from there. But I mean, that's all we needed to see to feel a little bit more confident, way more confident than we did a week prior about guys like Joe Mixon moving forward.
Right. I mean, Mixon, I thought it was over. Like, I thought it was like best bet you can make rest of season until they adjust is the under on his total yardage every single week. It hit against the Steelers. It did not hit last week against the Jags, man. So that part makes me nervous in terms of like fading Joe Mixon last week. But I think Chase Brown got out there and he looks pretty good. I'm sure he's going to be everybody's like favorite sleeper coming into next season. But for now, Mixon's still locked into the role rest of the way. On the Colts, Zach Moss was locked onto the field. We didn't get a lot of results. Do you put any stock into the lesser stats, but the great usage that we got out of Zach Moss last week?
Not much stock into it. I think you could chalk it up to just being like a bad game and it happens. The usage was great. Didn't leave the field, like you said, like over 90% of the snaps. But after looking back at just some parts of that game, there was an extra man in the box a good amount of the time in this matchup, which is why you saw some more one-on-one matchups on the outside and big days for those Colts receivers. Alec Pierce had one, Michael Pittman. Maybe that's because Zach Moss had almost 200 yards against him earlier in the season. I have no idea if that has to factor in, but that could be. I think moving forward, especially this week, Bengals do give it up to running backs. You can feel good about Zach Moss. And then we got the update. Yeah, 3 to 5 weeks for Jonathan Taylor. You might have Moss the entire rest of the way for your fantasy playoffs.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. I think he's like a top 10 running back rest of the season with this role. I think yeah. even though we didn't get that usage from, or we didn't get the results from him last week. Look, Michael Pittman, I think, is in another great spot here. I know it's gonna be tough to go back to Josh Downs after the week that he had last week, but James Coe noted this on a show I did with him last week, that like the Titans are sneaky, like they're a pass funnel team, but they're sneaky pretty good at limiting the slot. They really let you have it more from an outside receiver perspective. So I wouldn't get, I don't think Josh Downs is like a must start in any situation in fantasy, but I think he's going to have some better days ahead. So that's just one note I'd have from the Colts passing game there. All right, let's move on to the Jaguars at Browns. It looks like Trevor Lawrence is actually potentially going to play in this game. He was back at practice here on Thursday, which is crazy. When he got folded up and, you know, throwing his helmet to the ground on Monday Night Football, I was like, oh, great. There's another quarterback. Dunzo. Looks like maybe not here going into week 14.
Yeah, and that's huge, because if it was going to end up being CJ Beathard, you're looking at a really rough spot for guys like Calvin Ridley, for guys like Zay Jones, who want to work more downfields on a good amount of their routes. But if it's Trevor Lawrence, everything opens back up. You feel confident there. Evan Ingram in this one, somebody who stands out, came off of that big game, had success with both quarterbacks in that game. And he's going to get a lot of man coverage looks here. And this year, when he faces man coverage, he's averaging 6 receptions a game, not even targets, receptions a game. So this could be another big spot for Ingram.
I like noting, too, with just that the Browns defense, as they've kind of started to stack some injuries up, you know, they're not like a terrible defense, but they're 13th in success rate. They're kind of middle of the pack in EPA allowed. So if you're looking to get Jaguar players into your lineup, that would be a reason to get it there. We don't right now, as of the time we're taping this, Sal, know who is going to start for the Browns at quarterback. But, yo, how can it not be Joe Flacco? How can it not be Joe Flacco? That's some of the best, which, by the way, this is an insane statement I'm about to say, like an insane thing. The words that are about to come out of my mouth are things that a crazy person would say. But Joe Flacco gave the Browns some of the best quarterback play they've gotten since Jacoby Brissett last year. Oof. What am I talking about with these names? But it's the truth.
Yeah, no, it is true. He made it fun as well. Like, if you actually want to like make some fans have fun in the stands when they're there, throw the ball downfield. Like David Njoku, these last couple of months, he's piling up 10 target games. It's great for fantasy. But the reality is those targets are like 5 yards downfield from PJ Walker, and there's not much coming off of them. This offense has been thrown for so many loops. You lose Nick Chubb, that was supposed to be your offense. You lose your quarterback. At this point, you're looking like you could be a playoff team. You might win a playoff game by all the backup quarterbacks that are happening. Just let the veteran go out there and do what he's doing right now, chucking the ball downfield to Elijah Moore.
Yeah, slinging it downfield to Elijah Moore. More air yards than anybody else last week. And one thing that Monday Night Football should have reminded us about the Jags defense, good run defense, although again, they got ran over. But those cornerbacks are a weak spot. So obviously, if it's Joe Flacco, especially if there's no Amari Cooper and like Elijah Moore is going to get to run actual downfield routes, like you're talking about the little dinky dunk stuff with David Njoku. We've been getting a lot of that with Elijah Moore during his Browns tenure, not last week with Joe Flacco. So I think that would increase sort of the upside projections for Elijah Moore in that scenario. All right, next game up here, Bucks Falcons, big game in the NFC South. These are I don't know what you have to say about the Falcons. These are two pretty cut and dry teams as well here, Sal.
Yeah, they're two cut and dry teams. And I honestly like a good amount of these guys in fantasy. I don't know if that's just the way that I'm looking at this. Like Drake London has one catch last week and you're like, had to be the worst game of the season. No. Week one, he had 0 catches. So yeah. I just want you to forget all about that. Like they had, when you factor in the throwaways and the balls thrown in the dirt from Desmond Ridder, he threw 21 times last week. So it was not a good spot against the Jets. It wasn't good at all. But now this is like the one matchup that definitely for the rest of the season, Tampa just gives it up to receivers. They're not going to let you run on them. And this is a spot where Drake London can actually do something. We're hoping a little bit better of a matchup. So if you're still out there, I'm okay with Drake London in flex spots, especially in 12-man leagues. More specifically, he's right now my wide receiver 30 on the week.
Oh man. I love Drake London, the player. I'm a big Drake London fan. His over under on BetMGM's only 48.5. Like I could see maybe myself getting involved.
Over.
Yeah, I could listen. I'm with you, Sal. I'm riding on that. I think Drake London is hashtag due for a better performance here. So I don't know if I have the stones to start him in fantasy, but I will at least get myself invested in some Drake London that way. In the Bucks passing game, it's pretty simple, man. Mike Evans is balling out right now, and you're getting the like offensive coordinator quotes, which is like, we've got to find some creative ways to get Chris Godwin the ball. Never a good sign. Okay, that's not a good sign when this is a guy who's like a proven player and you're trying to devise creative ways to get him the ball. It just shows like what the like where these guys are at from a player perspective right now. But I'm curious your take on Rashad White the last 2 weeks, because I know you've been talking about him from a usage perspective basically like throughout the season. The usage has been great for a while there, buddy. The results from a fantasy perspective, but like from an efficiency perspective, not there. But lately that has sort of changed. Do you think Rashad White is a guy who has grown and developed a little bit throughout the season and is now just kind of firmly in the circle of trust in Tampa?
Yeah, I mean, I think in your second year, just more time there, that's just definitely going to come naturally. And yeah, I mean, when we drafted him, we wanted high usage and a guy who can catch passes, and anything else after that we'll take. And now we're getting all those bonus points from actually being efficient, hitting some 100-yard games. And even in tough matchups like he'll have this week on the ground, it's fine. We saw it earlier this year. We've seen it in like six other games. He'll just catch four or five passes, six passes sometimes. So yeah, I feel good about Rashad White. Sometimes maybe it's easier matchups these last couple of weeks for his efficiency, but that's what he should do in those matchups. So feeling good about him down the stretch. As of right now, when you're talking about like fifth, sixth round picks in fantasy, he's looking like one of those guys that's going to be on a lot of championship teams.
Oh, dude. I mean, I'm looking at it right now just in terms of the top, let's say, like the running back sort of 15 to 20, 22, or 23, because that's Cam Akers. I'm just looking back at like consensus ADP. This is kind of the running back dead zone, right? Like Damian Pierce, Kenneth Walker had his moments. Alexander Mattison, J.K. Dobbins injury, it is what it is. Breece Hall, Jonathan Taylor, kind of an extenuating circumstance. Miles Sanders, yikes. James Conner, it's been moments. Cam Akers literally got traded, okay, in the middle of the season. Now he's obviously out for the year. Like, in terms of the dead zone, like the running back dead zone, Rashad White, is he the king of the running back dead zone? Like, he's Jon Snow, like, with all the guys coming towards him. He's out there fighting them all. And he's risen here from the ranks of the dead zone, I think, to be, like, a potential top 10 back the rest of the season.
Yeah, he's a top 10 back this week. He's a survivor. He survived the dead zone. He's out there. And we'll see what happens next year when he's a third round pick.
Yeah, then it probably won't go so well. But I love that. Every year we've got to be on the lookout for the cockroach of the, which is not a, it's a disrespectful title. We'll workshop that. But like the cockroach, the survivor of the running back dead zone. Because for now, I think it has been Rashad White, which is pretty incredible. Yeah, maybe we can call it the Jon Snow. Producer Colin is right in the chat. Maybe we can call it the Jon Snow of the running back dead zone. But all right, let's move on to one of the two. Actually, both Monday Night Football games here round out the stream category. Titans, Dolphins. Derrick Henry, not at the concussion protocol. Derrick Henry going to play in this game, which is pretty exciting. He's stacked up two good performances back to back. How do you feel about him going against the Dolphins this week?
Yeah, this one's a little bit of a tougher spot. What, 14, 13 and a half point underdogs, depending on where you're looking. This hasn't been the best spot on the entire year for Derrick Henry, more so than previous seasons since Tajay Spears is back there. And they just trust this dude. Like, last week when Derrick Henry comes out of the game, another example of how much this organization trusts the rookie Spears. He gets overall in the game 20 touches. He's having big runs in overtime, explosive runs. He leads the league in breakaway run rate of 15 plus yards right now. The dude's solid. And this could be a spot as a 14-point underdog, as we saw earlier in the year, where he sees that 50 to 60% snap share. Maybe if you're in a desperation mode, he becomes a flex consideration for you. But more importantly, he'll probably take touches away or at least snaps from Derrick Henry if this game actually becomes a blowout as expected.
Since week 11, their bye week, Miami is number one in defensive success rate. Like, it's such a narrative, but it seems like it's true that when Vic Fangio takes over a defense, it takes a little bit to get these guys comfortable and integrated. And obviously Jalen Phillips now out for the rest of the season, that stinks. But this is a unit that is coming around, which makes me nervous for like DeAndre Hopkins in the passing game. I think that could be a real struggle for the Titans there. But obviously, we'll at least keep an eye on the backfield part of this here. On the Dolphins, same sort of thing, right? Like, we know we're getting in the passing game. I mean, Tyreek Hill is coming back-to-back weeks. He's going to face the Commanders and then the freaking Titans. Like, Yeah, go ahead and lock up the 2,000 yards, okay? Like if he's already pacing for it, now this is the matchups we're going to get to end the season. Go ahead and lock in the 2,000 yards. A few MVP votes here as well. I'm curious sort of the backfield here. Talked about this yesterday on Stat Nerds, Sal, but Raheem Mostert was kind of the more involved guy in the first half, Devon Achane in the second half. Is there anything to that, or are you fully confident in Achane going into this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably narratives you could pull off of that. Maybe they didn't really know if they wanted to give a full role to Achane, and then they started slowly giving him one, and they said, okay, take these seven carries in a row or whatever it was on one of those final drives of the game, and that's where it sort of leans the other way. I think as long as they think that he's healthy and he's fine, he'll probably see his 12 to 15 touches. I don't think it's going to be the 20-plus touch game. I don't think they want to do that again from him until the postseason. But if you're getting a guy averaging 9 yards a touch, even when that eventually regresses, yeah, the 10 to 12 touches, if that's all you get, you feel comfortable in that. And I just want to say about Tyreek Hill, I've done that. I think 6 years or 5 years I've been projecting just projections for the week. He projects for almost 1 point per route run this week. I've never had a guy that close. He's going to run like 30 routes this week, and he's projecting for nearly one point per route.
That is stupid. I mean, like outrageous stuff, but that's, yeah. He's getting like 4.5 yards per route run, man. I mean, it's like crazy stuff what Tyreek Hill is doing out there. So don't have to check the models there. That is probably correct.
Yeah, crazy. Absolutely nuts.
All right, the other Monday Night Football game is your Green Bay Packers, Sal, going to face the New York Giants. Tommy DeVito, Tommy Cutlets. I mean, he's been cooking of late, but can he be cooking in this game against the Packers? Because Jordan Love has really been absolutely crushing it lately. I don't know, from just a pure fantasy perspective, does anything stand out here on the Giants side of things?
I would say two things, dude. The rookie receiver, Jalen Hyatt, Pasta Sunday for Tommy DeVito here. I think Jalen Hyatt's somebody who is streaming in the right direction, trending in the right direction before the bye week. Now, how much do these big plays, how much can you rely on them? Probably not too much in this offense, but we know that they're at least happening a little bit more often. Gives you some more confidence. Had the 100-yard game before the bye, ran the second most routes on the team for the first time this year. So that's trending in the right direction. If it's see what happens the next couple of weeks of the season, keep an eye on him on your waivers. And then Saquon, his total yards for this game is projected at 97.5 on most of the books. I mean, they're saying exactly what a lot of people who've been paying attention to the Packers defense already think. Like, they just give it up to running backs. Saquon's the number one weapon on this team. Still no Darren Waller until probably week 15, they're saying. So you're starting Saquon either way, but you can feel good about him and consider him in some of those pick'em markets.
I like that call on Saquon Barkley. This could definitely be like a, hey, I'm back from the bye. I'm feeling fresh. I'm feeling good. It's a great matchup against the Packers. The Packers, obviously, look, it's potentially no Christian Watson in this game, although Aaron Jones might be back. Jordan Love, man, he's just making it go. He's making this offense go, and I love the way Jaden Reed is playing. I like me some Dontavian Wicks. I like Dontavian Wicks as a maybe deep sleeper in this matchup. I mean, again, it's crazy to say, but like, I want to find creative, unique ways to invest in this Jordan Love offense right now.
Yeah, and I agree with you on Reed, on Wicks. This is a spot where the Giants play the second highest amount of man coverage, which is very strange because they give it up just nonstop in man coverage, but it's like their best unit that they got out there, I guess. And Jordan Love has been great. He's been accurate. He's been much better throwing downfield. Now, his best man guy is Christian Watson, big fast receiver. Makes sense. He's out. But then after that, Dontavian Wicks is like neck and neck with Jaden Reed in target shares when it comes to the blitz, in target shares when it comes to man coverage. So I think Reed's just going to be out there in more formations. He's a guy that you want to start. But yeah, Wicks in deeper leagues, like you're saying, if you have a multiple flex spot league, it could be something to look at.
Yeah, I like the way both those young rookies are playing. And because of that, I mean, I already said this earlier, I think, this week on the pod. I mean, who the hell knows what we're saying at this point? Like, it's all kind of running together. I feel like I said this already on the podcast, but I'm going to get myself really excited about Jaden Reed and Dontavian Wicks if there's no Christian Watson, and then Romeo Doubs is going to catch 2 touchdowns. Like, that is how these things go. All right, that brings us to the skip category here, and these ones we can be real quick with, Sal. Denver Broncos, LA Chargers. It's crazy, and I saw a lot of people saying it this morning. It's like Josh Palmer might get activated off IR for the Chargers. Whoo, what a godsend. They really need that. I'm like, yeah, bro, Josh Palmer, man. Like that. But that's how down bad. That is how down bad the Chargers offense is right now. Anything from this game that really has your eye?
Yeah, I mean, we got recent report like an hour ago that maybe they're going to start to do different things in this backfield with Joshua Kelly and Austin Eckler. It was kind of a misleading quote. There wasn't really any certainty behind it.
I agree.
Yeah, I'm not too sure that I buy into anything from that. And the thing I will say about Austin Ekeler is, whether he's playing banged up, his offensive line has been banged up. His offense has not been efficient. And if you look at his matchups the last 6 weeks, Bears, Jets, Lions, Ravens, Patriots, those are five of the top 10 run defenses. This week, the Broncos, last time he had a good matchup, he averaged 6 yards per touch against the Packers. So I know you're probably starting him either way, but just to give you some more confidence if you are after those reports came out.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was sort of like a competition for carries type thing. I think it's when Brandon Staley said something similar, like competition in the secondary, they actually remade their entire secondary. But like, you know, we've seen Josh Kelly before. Like, we know who Josh Kelly is. He's a solid role player, but he's not a guy that I think is going to command a lot of work here. I don't, but you're right though. This is definitely a, I'm not going to say it's like a do or die moment for our guy, Austin Ekeler, but it is definitely, he's got to get it done in this matchup. And again, if anybody knows that, it's definitely Austin Ekeler. If you've listened to him talk on this podcast, he knows the position that he's in going into this game. And on the Broncos side, man, it's like Courtland Sutton, and that's it. That's the offense. The offense is Courtland Sutton. So, all right, next game up here, Minnesota Vikings, Las Vegas Raiders. The Vikings are going to start Josh Dobbs, which I think is the right call. I think Josh Dobbs going back to him was the right call, but I think Josh Dobbs is officially on like a short leash at this point. Now he might get benched for a guy like Nick Mullins or Jaren Hall or something like that. So that would make me a little nervous if I had to roll Dobbs into you know, a fantasy matchup if I'm streaming quarterbacks or something. But I don't know. I am at least interested to see what he looks like with Justin Jefferson out there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that it's probably fair to let him have an extra week with the team that he just joined recently to try and get some things down with the playbook. And yeah, the only thing that really stands out to me when it comes to the passing attack, Jefferson, with him out this year, Hockenson, 29% target share, with him in, 19%. So in terms of being like a top three tight end, that might drop off a little bit. And then Jordan Addison becomes a guy I don't really want to start. He goes down to a 13% target share. Smaller sample, of course. He's experienced a little bit more now as a rookie throughout the year, but it's just tough now with Jefferson back.
Yeah. What's your read on, I know this is not like the topic, but what's your read on Jordan Addison from like a dynasty perspective? Because I've seen some folks argue like he's clearly the wide receiver one from this class. Which I think is a little crazy, but because one, I don't think from an individual standpoint, we've seen him prove that he can be like a number one receiver. And then number two, like just from a fantasy perspective, he's never going to be the top target on this team. Like at any point, because we've got JJ, we've got TJ Hockenson. That makes me a little like nervous, I guess, from a player perspective and from just a fantasy perspective, if we're talking about Jordan Addison and dynasty.
Yeah. It's all about the expectations. If it's like number one overall, I'm probably not there, but I'm still pretty high on him. Like, Jefferson is going to sign his 3, 4, 5 plus year deal. And yeah, he'll be slid into this number two receiver role. But I believe at least in the offense that they have right there. And we don't know what's going to happen with Kirk Cousins, but maybe that's honestly a good thing for what could happen in this upcoming draft. And I'll just kind of buy into that in this offense in O'Connell.
I do really like Kevin O'Connell, and I think he's kind of like an underrated offensive coach at this point. I'm asking you a second Vikings question here because, I mean, I don't really know what there is to say about the Raiders. They're another one of these offenses that's extremely cut and dry in terms of, like, they're going to try to get the ball to Davante Adams. They're going to try to get the ball in Josh Jacobs' hands. And Jakobi Meyers is a really good player who can pop up every now and again, but not really as consistently as he was to start the year.
Yeah, so, I mean... In terms of like the Raiders, the only thing I could say about them is the 1 week where Josh Jacobs didn't have 20 carries with Antonio Pierce as his coach, he had 14 because they were trailing like the whole second half. And at the podium, Antonio Pierce was like visibly upset that he did not get 20 carries to Josh Jacobs, gave him 20 the next week. So when the line comes out for like 16 and a half attempts for Josh Jacobs, it's all like a narrative I'm forming here, but that could be something to keep in mind.
I like that a lot. All right. Final game of the week 14 slate. It's Panthers, Saints. Okay. Panthers, Saints. Are we getting Jameis Winston? Chris Olave did not participate in practice with an illness. Look, if it is, this is the thing. Like, I don't want to get myself gassed up about the Jameis Winston thing because Derek Carr has been a guy who like comes back. Oh man, you think he's just done. And then he comes back and he plays anyways. So that's why I have this game as a skip here, Sal, because it's like, what are we really talking about to get excited from this game?
Yeah. And the only thing that could possibly be worse is if Jameis Winston does start without Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and he's throwing to Taysom Hill all game. That's the only possible thing. If it's A.T. Perry and Rashid Shaheed and obviously dump off Salvin Kamara, I mean, that's the only possible thing with the illness now for Olave.
Oh, man. Yeah. A.T. Perry just getting moon balls downfield like from Jameis Winston. That's That's not really what I'm. That's not. I mean, I can't imagine what Michael Thomas's Twitter feed is going to look like then. I mean, give me a break. Although I think he may have deleted his account or whatever, but I don't know. Who knows? His people do things all the time now. I will just note, like, I want to see it more, but I liked the usage from Jonathan Mingo last week. I liked that they got him in motion. I'm wondering if they, now that, you know, Frank Reich is gone, they made a coaching staff change. I'm not saying that, like, Frank Reich's whole goal on the offense was to pump Adam Thielen full of stats or anything like that. Although it felt like it sometimes, but I'm not saying like this is the thing here, but Mingo was a guy that I liked in one role as a receiver prospect. And it wasn't the role he was playing so far this year. It was really kind of like, I actually liked him as a potential big slot, like the way Adam Thielen has been used. And Mingo's still going to run more of his routes from the outside, but like you can get him in motion. You can move him closer to the snap, stuff like that. So Mingo's season has not been encouraging so far, but that is something that, like, if you are a dynasty backer of Mingo or you want to, like, believe in a late season rookie surge, that was at least something to note from this game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And Marshawn Lattimore remains on IR, so that should only help him even more. I'll call out the backfield in Carolina where, I mean, last week, Chuba Hubbard, 25 touches. It was the Chuba Hubbard show. And I think there's a pretty telling reason why, outside of Miles Sanders losing this role throughout the season, there's like two plays in this game where he just absolutely missed a pass protection call. And when Bryce Young already has no time back there and just offensive lineman in front of him not blocking that well either, it's going to be really tough to keep Miles Sanders on the field in those situations. And that's what you saw. It seemed like he almost got benched in this game. I don't know if that's going to translate moving forward, but it looks like it's Chuba Hubbard's full role, at least heading into this week.
Yeah, I saw a press conference quote from Bryce Young saying, like, they asked him, how have you been able to stay healthy despite the fact you've been sacked so much and pressured so much? He's like, oh man, yeah, God is protecting me. I'm like, well, good thing you got God out there, because Miles Sanders sure is not doing it for you.
We're at that point in the season. I mean, there was like, it was like week four or week five where Justin Fields said something very similar. And I was like, oh, we are at that point in the season already at week five.
That's really bad when you're there at week five, but at least Bryce Young made it to December before saying, yeah, like, again, Miles Sanders, bro, come on, man. Like that was tough. That was a bad break. But all right, Sal, what has not been a bad break was this pod. You absolutely crushed it. You crush everything you do here on Yahoo. I appreciate you jumping on here for the first time this season. Tell the folks out there what you're working on rest of the way here at Yahoo and where they can find you.
Yeah, rest of the way at Yahoo's best matchups every week on Wednesday drops, and then the key findings on Friday. Anything else I put out, you can find on Twitter. Just search Sal Vetri.
Yeah, Sal does great work on social media, does great work on the video stuff here at Yahoo. And yeah, you can catch him every week on Fantasy Football Live, 7 p.m. Eastern, wherever, you know, any Yahoo product, YouTube, Twitter, whatever, you will find us there. Sal actually brings real high-quality information while the rest of us three knuckleheads are just messing around. So it's good stuff there. But again, Sal, appreciate it, man. This was awesome. That's going to do it for us today. Be sure to tune in first thing Monday morning to hear Scott Pienowski and I break down all the action from this pretty electric Week 14 slate. Until then, we're out.